in the Leafs. Now with Matthews, scores! Austin Matthews ends a bit of a drought for him with a goal from where he likes to shoot it, right in the slot. Marner on the left wing for Riley, a shot, he scores! Morgan Riley's shot goes off a stick. Was it Austin Matthews? It very well might be. And the Leafs are within one. Leafs get it again, shooting it at the empty net, it scores! Austin Matthews with the hat trick from about 172 and a half feet.
I love that big start of the show with the Matthews empty netter. This is the Fan Morning Show. JD Bunkus, Ailish Forfar, Blake Murphy. Good morning. Good morning. Yes, yeah, the Austin Matthews hat trick at Leafs Nation losing their minds. What a moment for the team. What a moment. What a game. What an absolute triumph that was, beating the brakes off. Wait, that was not really, I don't know. That didn't seem so great. I told you guys yesterday, I'm a process guy. Leafs continue to not play a full three periods against anybody. And it's they're choosing the first period or the third period. I don't know. This doesn't feel good. You feel great about Austin Matthews' hat trick yesterday?
No, but I feel like we've learned something. If you're a Leafs fan, all you need to do is just tune into the third period. Do something else for the first two periods. You know, clean your house, watch the Raptors game. Hey, and then when you know the third period's coming, you turn the TV on, you'll see quite the show.
The only real reason to feel good about the Austin Matthews hat trick is he's right back in the old Rocket race now, back up to 28 goals. So, look, you actually he's fourth. Okay. So you need sometimes those games to just pad the stats against a Flamborough, you know, just some, you need some team that's going to have, it's an obvious over spot, JD, as you laid out on the show yesterday. You've got, Akira Schmid in net. It's a good one to, if you're Austin Matthews, to just get off that mini slump and get it going again.
The defending on the game winning goal for the Leafs, Ailish.
Oh my
God.
I need you
to tell me what level of hockey you last played where if that happened, where you wouldn't say something to your teammate.
I truly watched it probably three or four times.
I know.
I think that guy was covering a ghost. Like, I honestly am worried for him because he was not covering a human. Like, he blacked out. You're right. Yeah, he had a full-on blackout on the ice. It was... I don't know. Like, I took a screenshot of it and I tweeted it out, and it's tough to look at. Like, I would say maybe I have played some outdoor shinny beer league in minus 30 conditions and people have played better defense than that.
We talk about potential trade deadline targets for
he was supposed to be one.
Oof. Yeah, Damon Severson was on that list. I think if the Leafs acquired him now, you know, I'm sure, look, Damon Severson's had some solid seasons. I don't know that everyone knows, like, day-to-day what Damon Severson's defense looks like. I can't imagine any Leaf is going to be thrilled with name coming up after that play.
Okay, that makes the most sense, though, now, because I was trying to come up with conspiracies as to why that
guy did that. He's already playing for the Leafs, that's why.
Yeah, well, either he wants to play for the Leafs so bad that he's going, Dubas, look what I'm willing to do for this team. I'll let you win. I'll do whatever it takes. Or he's so averse to coming up to Canada and playing in Toronto in front of the no fans that he went... Look at me. I'm the worst defenseman who ever lived. Timothy Liljegren must have been send him a thank you letter after that game. He's going, "Hey man, thanks so much for taking the heat off me as the worst guy in my own zone yet again on another night." I'm sorry. I know I should be more positive. The Leafs reunite the top line, and it's been clicking ever since the Detroit game. Marner, Matthews, obviously the chemistry against bad teams has been incredible. Marner and Matthews can score a lot of goals against Detroit and the Devils with Damon Severson, where it's stiff corpse skating backwards and covering no bodies. I just can't get excited about that stuff anymore. I'm just sorry. I don't know. I maybe I should be better at this. Maybe I should be different with this. But yeah, I'm aggravated hearing the hat trick stuff off the top. This is no time for the Leafs to be celebrating. Their coaching staff should be on their asses for the way that they've been playing of this stretch. Once again, they start slow. This is an old school Leafs problem. And yes, you're going to start on time every single night. No, but you should probably do that after you just lost to the, or you, after you just had to come back against the Detroit Red Wings, after you just did that. We talked about how this was an easy response game for them, where you go, hey, pick it up, have a good night, play a full 60, because you haven't played a full 60 in a while. And the Leafs used to do this, and they've always done this, which is they lower themselves to their competition. And it's aggravating. Aggravating. There's supposed to be little markers where you say this team's maturing in some way, this team's getting better at this, this team's changing at this, and still they're picking a period where they're just deciding to take it off. And whether it's the third and they're blowing a lead, or it's the first and they're giving one up, these just aren't really good patterns from a team that's supposed to be a cup contender and that's supposed to be evolving and supposed to be maturing.
Two things on that. When I've played, sometimes your coach is able to find a way to like spin these type of things into positives. Like, hey, we're finding ways to lose, to win games that we were losing, or finding ways to build character. And that's going to be something important down the road. But it seems like every single game they're trying to pull out like learning lessons from a devastating collapse that, or a game where they come back. But it's, the fact of the matter is you just like don't deserve to win some of these games, and you're getting lucky. And like that's not something to be proud about, that you have one of the best goal scorers of this generation that just can pot three goals quickly. And then you got a Marner that can pull the game together. And sure, your record isn't as bad as it looks, but this stretch of games has been not great for the Maple Leafs, and they've been lucky. And like, that's a tough thing to be riding on, is luck, because if they had lost three out of four of these games that they should have, we'd be seeing it a bit more on the standings. And I think it all comes back to what you've said. And I've tried not to always agree with this fact, but I really felt like it last night, with just deflated in terms of their energy levels and having no fans. Really felt like last night was another time where they came out with just no drive, with just no passion, and they were very lackluster until they had to have some sort of dramatic comeback. And you can't have that be something you lean on, and I know that's something that hopefully is changing soon, but they've just deserved to lose a lot of these games. And it gets a bit scary when you're just getting lucky to be in the conversation against a New Jersey Devils team.
I don't know that I agree that they've been, you know, didn't deserve to win these games necessarily. They've been underwhelming by the standards that the Leafs have set, but they have the best power play in the league, and they haven't been on the wrong side of like the shot and possession share in seven straight games. So I'm not, it can be underwhelming. I don't know that they don't like quote unquote deserve to win. I really do think the crowd factor is a thing. I was talking to a friend in the media who was at the game last night, and I texted him, late, because I was watching it after Raptors, and I said, one thing I like about this is like the audio mix when you're watching on TV picks up the sounds of the game really, really well. It sounds like you're there and up close. And he's like, yeah, except in the arena, they're playing fake crowd noise, and like the game ops are still blaring with no fans there and stuff. I don't know. It sounds super awkward there. I know both teams are playing in the same situation, so it's not an advantage or disadvantage for either, but I do wonder if that's why you're seeing some of these energy and momentum swings be a little even more dramatic than usual.
Well, the only thing is they've been playing games on the road, and the issues have been the same in terms of playing complete games. And also, you sound like the American soccer coach right now with, oh, we had the possession and we were dominated.
But no, I'm saying for both ways.
But that's what I'm saying is that it didn't look like the Devils had a problem coming out with jump last night. They were all over the Leafs to start that game.
But they certainly lost it late, right?
Yeah, like, they lost. I think what they lost was just that they were facing a team that was far more talented than that was playing with a little bit more desperation and came out in the third and decided that they were going to play hockey again. And that had a line with Matthews and Marner that is clearly far more talented than anything the Devils can ice. There's no question that Bunting, Matthews, Marner, which now again they have gone back to, is going to dominate teams like the Red Wings. They're dominating everybody. Listen, you want to talk about shot share, possession, all those different numbers. That's where those guys have been incredible. But this is a test for the playoffs. This is what this is supposed to be all season long, right? Hey, what new habits are we going to find out about the Leafs? And I'm sorry, it's a hard bar to have for this team, but it's the position that they put themselves in, right? Mm-hmm. And what we've seen in past years is when Matthews and Marner don't dominate in the playoffs because they're being hardline matched against other groups, what happens? They don't look like a dominant team. When the Leafs go into the playoffs this year, what's going to happen? They're going to end up facing a Bruins team, a Panthers team, or a Lightning team that is going to drastically change the way that you see Matthews and Marner play hockey. And that's not to any... They might play just as well as they were playing last night, but just the level of competition is going to be so much higher that that is not going to be as great of an advantage for you. So what is going to happen down the lineup? Well, you're going to have better goaltending. You're going to have more of a push from your other lines, more secondary scoring, better defensive play. And a lot of those other things aren't really there right now. The goaltending from Jack Campbell, once again, not up to snuff. The blue line, if we're learning anything from the absence of Jake Muzzin, it's that the Leafs have a sixth and seventh defenseman in Timothy Liljegren and Travis Dermott, who really don't belong to be playing in the NHL right now. I'm sorry. I know that people, for now, some reason, think that Liljegren is the whipping boy, Dermott's the whipping boy, and you can't make fun of Liljegren, but both those guys are terrible. Like, the plays, Liljegren's not strong enough, and he doesn't make smart enough plays, and Dermott is just, I don't even know what Dermott's redeeming quality is at this point in his career. And then the forward groups are mostly solid, but there's just too many brain farts and too many, like, lapses and inconsistencies, and not enough dominant play for Ankle from the second line yet again. So, I don't know. I thought last night's win was a pretty disappointing one. Last night's win was maybe undercut by what we've discussed, which is that there's no fans and it felt lifeless. We went from this Canada soccer game and then... But I went to Raptors primary yesterday. I won't lie. Like, I went Raptors first and then I watched the end of the Leafs game second and ended up, you know, watching it on PVR recorded because I just couldn't do it after the first period. The way that they played in the first, I just thought, I can't do this. I'm not going to be able to stay awake. I had the Raptors game on. I flipped it over. These guys played 50 minutes the night before. They're all running on fumes, and they're all giving, exactly like I said, a tough effort against a Hawks team on the road. And they deserved the primary screen, so they got it.
That Dermott-Liljegren pairing, a little over 10 minutes at 5-on-5 together, and basically an even shot and possession share, despite starting six shifts with offensive zone faceoffs and only one in the defensive zone. That is pretty remarkable. They're the anti-Kasha Kampf third line with those kind of numbers. And Liljegren, like, even take the numbers away, Liljegren is a mess in his own end. It's tough, and I know he had a good pinch at the one point, and he helps lead to offense and stuff, but it's shaky, man. And I know that right now you're forced to play him with Dermott, and it just kind of exacerbates the problem because neither of those guys are particularly steady right now, but I don't think that Sandin is going to be able to carry either of those guys to better defensive zone minutes when the decor is a little bit better.
You really notice Muzzin not in the lineup, and it's going to be a little bit of a while without him, it seems, just in terms of with the All-Star break coming up. He is a consistent, I don't know, force, reliable person back there. I just felt like the Liljegren game, that was the Liljegren game. I feel like everybody finally kind of clued into it. The people that were his supporters, his simps over the last little while, they have gotten off the ship, and they're definitely very frustrated with his play. And it's not even against a team that I would be, you know, worried about. If this happens where they have to play that stretch where they play the Bruins, the Flames, the Florida Panthers, the Lightning, there's that one stretch where they play them like five or six times, like, he's just gonna get exposed. So I just, like, don't know what answers you have, though, right? Like, we have these puzzle pieces. We can't really move them around too much. Like, they have to fit. Like, they have to be what the Leafs do for the next maybe 2 weeks. So it's just, he was really exposed last night, and it looked deflating on the back end when you have to put that kind of pairing out and just hope for the best.
Yeah, I've been pretty positive about this team all year, and I've been really impressed with a lot of things. I've obviously loved the addition of Michael Bunting. I've loved the addition of Kampf. Kasha has slowed down a little bit since the injuries, but he was still an astute signing who has been a really welcomed addition to this team. Mm-hmm. I think Marner, since coming back from injury, has been brilliant. In fact, just, you know, I think the Matthews, the second goal of that game, God, he makes just another beautiful Marner play on it. He's mm-hmm. been incredible. There are a lot of positives with this team. Jack was playing great for the first beginning of the season, just a lot. But that talent, that Matthews-Marner talent, that's why you get frustrated when you see nights like this, is that the Leafs have just sort of had this in their DNA. And yes, every team goes through these stretches. I get it. It's 82 regular season games. But it's just, you know, a friend texted me yesterday, and it's true, and it resonated with me, which is this Leafs team, they don't just give you an inch. They give you a mile when they take the foot off the gas pedal. They don't just have a little blip. It's a big blip. They'll have a period off. And it's just another game where they end up having a period off. And so if I'm them, yes, the standings look great. But the standards is to the level that it is because you have the talent that you have. People are frustrated because you're good. If they were a bad team and they played this way, then who would care, right? Who would care? It's that you're the kid in school that doesn't get good enough grades despite being brilliant. Like, so people are going to hold you to a higher standard, and a B is not good enough. A B minus isn't good enough. And that's the Leafs right now. And so... this last night was frustrating. And if I'm them, yep, you go in tonight, you try to take care of this final game, and then you hit the break, and you hope that everybody can kind of have a little bit of a look themselves in the mirror moment. Kyle Dubas trying to address that blue line, because yes, he cannot go into the playoffs with it as currently constituted. Jake Muzzin's straight up too much of a band-aid to be relying on him anyways. He's been hurt mm-hmm. multiple times going into the postseason. You can't trust that guy's going to be there available for you. And you can't have it so that the next option is picking between Liljegren or Dermott, or having both of them on the ice at the same time. Some of those forward groups, the Tavares line, they're going to have to say to themselves, like, hey, what are we going to do? How are we going to dominate in ways like we did the other night if we're not getting, what was it, Blake, 90% offensive zone starts? There's just different. Jack Campbell, you're out of rhythm, okay? That was a horrible, horrible, horrible month for you. That was really bad. You haven't really been good for quite some time, and that pull was justified, and the team turned it around after you weren't in the net. And I'm guessing that you're thinking a little bit about how you got the starter's job last year and how it seemed inconceivable to many at some time, and then all of a sudden it wasn't. Like, some guys need this break already, despite them having had a break a month ago, which is just weird.
So I saw a stat about Jack Campbell after he was selected for the All-Star game. He's turned his four consecutive starts in with a save percentage of 850 or worse, not zero. And he's allowed four goals in each of his past six starts. So I don't know if it's he had that break where he had the COVID protocol. And I think the rhythm is a really good point to bring up, because goaltenders like to be rest day, practice day, game. Like, they get into a rhythm where they're very meticulous about their type of, you know, preparation. And he had a stretch where he was in the COVID protocol, and then now he's fighting it. He's really fighting it. It's been tough to watch. And the thing that I've been interested in, and I think we can talk to Luke Fox about that today when we have him on the show, is how the players are responding to Jack's down month. They're saying a lot of really positive things, and they're putting a lot of blame on themselves, saying, oh, you know, he's been great, but we're the ones struggling. We're the ones that have like led to this demise. But at what point do you say, you know, Jack hasn't been playing his best, but, you know, we also need to pick it up in front of him instead of just shouldering the load yourself? I just wonder, like, how that works and what the dynamic is. And maybe Luke Fox can give us more information on, like, why they seem to be tiptoeing so much around saying, hey, yeah, you got pulled in, like, the first period of a game against the Devils. Like, you know, is Keith coming out and saying, we need more from him? Like, you got to pick it up, buddy. You're our number one starter. I know he's never been a number one for any other team. This is quite the workload for him. But at what point do you have to, you know, kick somebody a little bit into high gear? And that's just the question I have over, like, what happens in the next month with the All-Star break. He's going to be there. So is he not getting the rest? Like, I am a little bit concerned about just how this shakes out.
I'll be honest. I don't think this is a rust thing with Jack anymore. I think this is a rhythm thing and a mental thing and just playing poorly. And also that this is a guy, and we've said it so many times, it's almost annoying. It's become a new cliche, but this might be what happens when, or this is might be why you play out a full season before you give somebody a contract, because you want to see what they look like over the course of 82, not what they look like over the course of a pandemic season where you're playing the same team a bunch of times and you're a front runner winning 10 games in a row, and or just the beginning of a red hot season to the Leafs. Blake, I know that your one big number is Jack related.
Yes, it is. So I don't mean to undercut the good work Jack did early in the season. We've all been very clear. He was in the Vezina race, etc. And at one point, we were looking at some of the advanced goalie metrics and saying, hey, oh yeah, it's him and Shesterkin right there. So Campbell has slid from second to ninth in goals saved above average. But your big number here is that in 10 of his last 13 starts, he's had a negative goals against versus expected goals against. So sub 900 save percentage over the last 13, but narrowing those down to individual games, 10 of those 13 are what you'd call below average nights in the net, which is just, you know, at the start of the season, I don't know that he had, you know, I don't know that the numbers weren't completely flipped where 10 of the 13 were positive nights in net. So this is being backed up by the basic stats like save percentage, just being backed up by the advanced stats. This is being backed up by Jack smashing his helmet when he gets when he gets pulled and looking visibly frustrated. So there's a consistency there in all signs pointing in the same direction that Jack's going through it a bit.
Yeah, and here's the thing that Jack should be comforted in. Everyone on the planet is rooting for that guy. So again, you get this all-star break. You get to go down there. You get to be reminded of who you are, what you've accomplished, what you've done, and what you need to be for your team to win. Frankly, he needs to be an all-star for them to win the Stanley Cup this year. So let's move on. Speaking of all-stars, Gary Trent Jr., he's the Raptors' all-star representative, obviously. That's who we were all putting our weight behind. That's clearly the Raptors' best player. There's no doubt about it. Fred is a nice backup, or a nice point guard, him, nice backup option to him in the backcourt or whatever, secondary option. Siakam is a nice guy, but Gary Trent Jr., my God, man on fire. Gary Trent Jr., everything he's shooting is going in. It doesn't matter. Just put it up, Gary. There's no more bad shots for Gary Trent. Gary Trent started the season as the guy that I was afraid of taking bad shot after bad shot. And normally, if you would have said, hey, the Raptors started February and these are Gary Trent's field goal attempts, I'd have fainted. I would have been very upset. And now here I am, Gary Trent Jr. Blake, what are you just making of the play right now? Is this a hot streak? You seeing something different from him? Like, what's going on with Gary?
I'd say hot streak, but it's been happening all season, right? Like, he's averaging 18 a game, and this 30-point streak is different, obviously. But he's been cruising at basically a league average efficiency, despite being a guy who doesn't get to the rim and doesn't finish well at the rim. It's league average efficiency almost on almost entirely jump shots, and a lot of those self-created. So pulled some numbers here in terms of like non-point guard, non-center, so wing forward, whatever you want to call the 2-3-4 guys. Only Devin Booker, Seth Curry, and Kevin Durant are taking more mid-range shots at a higher percentage than Gary Trent Jr. Devin Booker, KD, and Seth Curry. That's it. I tweeted out last night that the guys around the league who have streaks of four games in a row with 30 or more points, I think maybe Donovan Mitchell is the only one in that group that's not going to be an all-star. It's only been done by 10 different guys this year, and it's only been done 17 times around the league, and that list includes Gary Trent now. So it's pretty rare. He's one game off tying DeMar's franchise record for 30 pieces in a row. So this is pretty remarkable. I think that the most interesting thing about it from a Raptors perspective is, yes, this team's going to look at its best when Fred has the shot going, when Pascal's working as a kind of a point guard and initiator, and Gary just kind of fills in the gaps. And where those gaps present themselves, if you're a team like the Raptors, that in the half court doesn't have a lot of lethal shooting and really doesn't have anyone who can put pressure on the rim, those in-between gaps are there. When you're drawing up an offense in a vacuum, you probably don't want a non-star player taking a ton of pull-up twos and stuff and taking the volume of shots. Like you don't want a Gary Trent Jr. type taking 22. But you look at this offensive ecosystem that the Raptors exist within, And not only is Gary Trent Jr. shooting those shots well, but those shots are so crucial to the Raptors offense because he's the only one right now that can create for himself those like quality looks inside the arc, because the other guys just, you know, there's not a lot of rim pressure, and you like Fred's a great pull up 3-point shooter, but you don't want to rely on like that streak there where Fred was averaging 14, 15 3-point attempts a game.
Yeah. So to me, it's a positive and a negative, because it's a positive that Gary Trent Jr. is playing this well. There's no doubt about it. And I do think that there is a conversation now to be had of are we going to be open to the possibility of Gary Trent Jr. actually being more, considering that what he's 22, 23 years old, just turned 23, that maybe he's an even better shooter than we thought he could be. Maybe he is more than a guy that was an open three threat, that he could be a better off the dribble guy. But he's also someone, when you're talking about rim pressure, that doesn't get a lot of free throw attempts. Like if Gary Trent Jr. gets 5 free throw attempts in a game, I go, wow, that's a lot for Gary Trent Jr. And that's not a lot for somebody who is scoring 30 points a night, right? That's really low. That's a really low number. And when I watched the Raptors close that game, I saw a really tired Fred VanVleet who took 20 shots and didn't hit a lot of them, who just didn't look like he had his legs. And I saw just the same thing, which was a lot of ISO ball and Gary Trent Jr. bailing them out right now, that they're hanging in these games because Gary Trent's a man on fire. But ultimately, I talked to you guys about this, a week ago, where the assist percentage with this team is low, and I'm worried at times about how much better guys make each other. I think that there is chemistry between VanVleet and Siakam. Those two guys clearly know how to play with each other, dribble handoff situations, pick and roll, whatever. They look for each other. They play well off of each other. Even late shot clock situations where Pascal starts to initiate his offense, VanVleet knows how to play off of him and where to go into open spaces in the floor. They feel like they're playing together. And then you're watching the other three guys, and it always feels like they're kind of playing in isolation, that they're waiting for the ball either to shoot it, or they're just kind of standing around and not really doing much in either some combination of Barnes, Trent, and OG. And I really saw that again last night, where I was thinking, boy, if Trent's not a man on fire and hitting these shots, this kind of ends up looking ugly, other than the times where Siakam put the rim pressure on and went at the basket.
I did think that Fred had a pretty decent point guard game. He obviously shot the ball poorly.
Too many shots, yeah. If you're going to be that cold, man.
Yeah, but, this is the thing, is like, who do you give those shots to? And sometimes that answer isn't always clear in the Raptors offense. So, yes, I think, again, the Gary Trent thing is interesting because he's not the type that makes other guys on the team better, right? Like, he's not getting another team into foul trouble. He never turns the ball over, but that's because he doesn't really pass the ball. And not turning the ball over is a nice thing to have in your offense. But yeah, he averages 2 assists and 2 free throw attempts a game flat. So he's basically a scoring specialist at this point on offense, which the Raptors really need. More than 60% of Gary Trent Jr.'s 2s this year have been unassisted. That is the number you're dealing with. So when you're talking about this team's assist rate, Gary Trent Jr. is creating his own buckets more than 60% of the time inside the arc. And even on threes, more than 20% of his threes have been self-created. That's a pretty high mark for a role player as well. A guy who, when you traded for him, had a bit of a 3-and-D reputation with, you know, it was a 3+ and a D- kind of reputation. So, I'm with you. It does look like Trent kind of operates unto himself sometimes, and they need him to do that. The question for this team, and really, you know, that starting five, I feel like looks solid together. They're starting to figure it out defensively. The lineup numbers don't exactly bear out that those five have been great together. And I do think part of that is they haven't figured out the offensive synergy yet. They know what each guy does well. And with the exception of Siakam and VanVleet, to your point, JD, I don't know that they know how to say, here's what OG does well, here's what Sky does well, here's what Gary does well, and here's how we can take those things and make life easier on Siakam and VanVleet, and here's how we can, you know, OG and Barnes and Trent can get each other in favorable positions as well. So I do think you're seeing that, and I think that bears itself out in some small sample lineup data, because as good as that five-some looks defensively, they're not, you know, on the season, they're not winning their minutes yet.
Ailish, what did you think about those guys on the bench at the end of that game after those minutes and seeing this is the first of four games or five nights stat go up on the board.
It's crazy. Like, when you look at the games, I was shocked that this was four out of five of the next games. After we just talked about them being exhausted and them not having, you know, the legs. They played a three overtime game on the weekend and then they have to go through this. I feel for them. Like, you
they
know,
look gassed.
They look gassed. And what is there really as an option? Like, you can't, you know, ice bath is one thing, you know, you lay low, but there isn't really enough time to fully recover when you're playing back-to-back nights, maybe one day off. It's just, it's going to be quite a stretch of their character over the next week. And I think that's the thing I've loved the most about watching the Raptors play this year. Like, I don't really sometimes care if they win or lose the game. I like to see, as you said off the top, like the process and how the team's looking. And they are finding so much fight, even when you think there's no chance that the Raptors like going to have anything in this game. They're exhausted. They just did this. They just did that. They only have five players, yet somehow they find this like upper edge and they have this grittiness to them. And I see that a lot in Gary Trent Jr. with just how he attacks and how he plays. And he just like, he's playing with this swagger and this confidence. And I think all the Raptors are, which kind of defies the logics of it because they must be so exhausted mentally and physically. But I think that's the biggest thing I'm looking forward to this week. And we have a lot of Raptors games to talk about and to, you know, cover, but they have been a really fun team, a pushy, gritty team to watch, especially when you compare it to what their Toronto Maple Leafs brothers were doing on the ice. It's so much better to watch the Raptors because you feel like they're playing for something and they care and they want to, they don't even know if they're like, are they going to make the playoffs? What's their role? Like what we always talk about, are they sellers? Are they buyers? They don't care. They're just going to go out and be this hot, spicy team, and it's just really fun to watch. So I felt for them when I saw them leaning over at the end of the game. They're exhausted, but also, you know, they're going to put up probably some incredible games over the next stretch because they just have that team dynamic that feel like they'll fight for each other.
I don't think tonight's going to be an incredible game. Miami just got
smoked. Well, we said that before.
Celtics, but Miami also played in that triple overtime game and then played last night against Boston. And now Toronto and Miami play tonight.
Look at the difference between those two teams, though. Miami got whooped and the Raptors found a way, right?
It's here's the thing about Miami's back-to-back. They got beaten so badly, nobody other than Max Strus played big minutes.
They all slapped.
But they also had no Jimmy in that game, too, which is anyway,
all I'm saying is tonight, I wouldn't be surprised if those two teams end up having a slop fest. And this is one where if I'm Nick Nurse, I'm honestly considering sitting Fred in this game. I feel like there's got to be a little bit of consideration for him in particular, because I'm looking at the Raptors athletes like the OG and Siakam and Precious and Scotty, and I don't really did they look tired at the end of that game? Sure, but Siakam still got stronger as the game went on. I thought Siakam looked great down the stretch. He had a bunch of really nice plays. He attacked the rim well. Gary, it feels like that him being on the shelf for that extended stretch has done him well in terms of still being able to look fresh right now. Mm-hmm. Like, he's able to give the Raptors all of the offense that Fred was giving them. Fred is the one dude where it looks like the workload is starting to hit him in a way where it's going through the rest of the game. And Blake, I know you just said that he had a good point guard game, but to me, I don't know. That's not really what I saw with Fred yesterday. I see a guy that looks slower on defense, that does not look nearly as engaged on that end as he normally does, which is, you know, Fred the brat, where he's in everybody's stuff. He's in their kitchen and he's just working inside and he's got active hands and he's forcing turnovers and you're wondering why guys that are much bigger than him are not able to get good position. And offensively, it looks like he's settling for a lot more shots that don't have the same amount of legs in them. And so, yeah, tonight against the tough Miami team, I would think about, hey, you know what? Maybe give Fred a blow. Maybe see what you can get with point guard Scotty Barnes. I like when Scotty brings the ball up and seeing a little bit more of that. Get another night from Banton where he plays some more minutes. For God's sakes, go back to Malachi Flynn. at some point here, I don't know, with 4 and 5 nights, I don't know how comfortable I'd feel about Fred playing in every single one of them, given how he's looked lately.
Fred's defense last night, I mean, part of that might just be the Hawks kind of went away from having the type of guys you'd normally want Fred guarding. Like, Trae Young didn't play. So, you know, what is he doing on DeLon Wright? Nothing, really. You don't have to be that guy defensively against DeLon Wright. And even, like, all respect in the world for a guy I've loved, 2022 Lou Williams does not quite require that same level of respect.
I think
it's telling too. Look, single game plus minus doesn't tell us a whole lot, but the Fred minutes with the bench were the only functional minutes that that bench group got last night. And I think that that's still telling about how Fred drives his team. I one last thing on the fatigue, something I was very impressed with last night. The late game offense in the half court is never going to be gangbusters for this team. But I thought that they did a really good job of showing no mental fatigue. Remember late in the Heat game where Fred had that really nice play where he broke the defense down, kicked it to Gary. Gary swung it to OG in the corner, and the clock had expired. And they just, like, it was just a little bit of a lapse of timing. And then last, you contrast that to last night where Fred breaks the defense down into the paint, does the kind of stop, start, up and under, finds OG in the corner for that huge corner three. And I thought that those plays in contrast, but really the late game execution in general showed that even though these guys were physically tired, they were still mentally sharp, which is really tough in these kind of stretches as well. So you're right, though. The Heat are not a team that allows you to do that kind of thing, right? Like, it feels like the Raptors have played the Heat a ton the last couple years, and it's almost always a slog fest. Like, I've got the game logs here, and you can go back to 2019, and there's one instance where both these teams have an above-average offensive night. That's it. You're looking at an average offensive night.
You can go back to the playoffs. Are you kidding? Man, Kyle Lowry game 7, that was the only...
Yeah.
We all think of that series for Kyle Lowry game 7 because it was his breakout moment. If you had to go back and I had to pay you to watch the 6 games before that, you'd need a lot of money because it's rock fights. It is rock fight.
Those are 90s.
Bludgeoning. Yeah, a lot of 90s and
we'll have to take a look
contest.
At the over-under in the Wake and Rake segment at 8:30. That's coming up a little later, and we'll tee up Raptors and Leafs both on a back-to-back, so we'll tee those games up a little later. We've got Josh Hosang coming up at 7 o'clock, which is awesome. Really excited about that. Luke Fox a little later, and then Matt Castle to walk us through some of the quarterback stuff that we're looking ahead to in the Super Bowl. It's also Text Line Tuesday. So fire in your thoughts, your questions, 590-590. We'll be sorting through those around 7:30, around 9 o'clock throughout the day. We'll sprinkle them in. So send us your text, Leafs thoughts, Raptors thoughts, Canada soccer thoughts, Super Bowl thoughts, whatever you got. 590-590. Hit us on our socials, at JD Bunkus, at Ailish Forfar, Blake Murphy on Twitter and Instagram. All that. We got a loaded show. Leafs and Raptors win. Homer's parlay hits. Even the super homer's parlay with Leafs minus 1.5 sneaks through with the empty netter. I'm assuming that's why Vic brought us in with the empty netter call, because that had Vic cash out. It was Vic's pick for the day. All that coming up. Fire away the text. 590-590. It's a Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Ailish Forfar, J.E. Bunkus, Blake Murphy.
Am I dumb?
Yeah.
Why I know, are you dumb? But...
Well, yes, Vic, but why this time?
Vic just buzzed in my ear. He went, "Even you can figure this out." The song. Because you know I like to play the guessing game for the song. And my brain has gone completely... Blake, you got it?
Yeah, it's All Star by Smash Mouth. And I'm assuming Ailish is going to walk us through all these hilarious, awesome NHL All-Star Vegas games. Look at that.
Ding, ding, ding.
Well, I don't even know what they are, so fill me in, Ailish.
Now,
well,
it's time for the A-List.
Bing, bong.
Bing, bong.
Bing, bong.
What's up, baby?
Well, you set it up perfectly. The NHL is hosting their All-Star weekend in Las Vegas, so they're going to do some different fun little All-Star game related things. And I, on record, have said that I don't really like the All-Star game because I feel like the players don't really play, but I like the All-Star activities. And
you
I think
you,
that they
if you had one wish from a sports genie, you'd completely get rid of it.
Yeah, I would completely get rid of the whole weekend. Yeah. But if I'm finding a small thing to find it interesting, I like the skills competitions. I like the hardest shot and the fastest skater. I think those things are interesting. I just don't think the players play very hard during the All-Star game. And the fact that everybody needs to have a representative, like it's some sort of like, I don't know, fairness competition. I don't like that. I'd rather see all the best players. So that's a whole other side note. We've talked about that. Okay, so they have some new games. some new little things. One of them I would be absolutely awful at, and I'll tell you why. So it is called NHL 21 in 22. That's the name of the event, okay?
Love this.
So basically it is, they're shutting down a part of Las Vegas Boulevard and hanging a full deck of oversized cards on a rack, okay? And it's putting a little bit of a twist on street hockey because the players are out on the street playing. But what you're doing is playing blackjack. The objective of the game is to create a hand of 21 without going bust in the least amount of number of shots. So you're trying to hit blackjack. You have five shots to hit blackjack. You're shooting at these cards. And accuracy comes into play. Time comes into play. And math comes into play. And if somebody's not great at either of those things or all of those things, this would be probably my worst nightmare. First of all, doing like math on the fly with everyone watching you and be like, yeah, yeah, hit 21, hit 21. And you hit like a 4 and then a 7 and a 6. And you're trying to like, you're trying to add quickly. And what if you hit the wrong card? It's just, I think it's going to be hilarious to see who's like good at quick math. But that's a new game that they have introduced.
I can't wait for the math part of this. So I don't know if either of you guys saw last night, the in-arena game at the Philadelphia 76ers game. They had a fan, and it's not really basketball related other than Franklin. Their mascot is the dealer. Mm-hmm. And they have a fan play blackjack to win a prize. And the fan gets 17 against a dealer 7. And he hits, and that's not a great decision. Mm-mm. He draws a 3. He's at 20. He hits again. He hit on 20 in a game of blackjack.
This what was the card night. That came up?
Well, I forget exactly what it was, but it was a bust for sure. And Franklin, the mascot, his reaction to it, dealing this dumb. Card was ridiculous.
I would even know not to do that.
I can't wait for a hockey player to be at like 19.
Yeah, we're pretty dumb, so.
Not realize that like, hey, and I know they get 5 shots or 6 shots or whatever it is. So maybe you want to make sure that no one's going to catch you and go over. But someone firing for a 2 when they have 19 and busting instead because they just missed, I'm looking forward to it.
See, the reason why I like this the most, there's a couple things that I like about this. But when you make a mistake at a blackjack table, that's the lowest you Ooh. Will feel. That's the lowest you can feel on earth is that very moment is... That mistake and the judgment of your peers at the table, especially when you're there and you're with the D-gens. You're not just at the table with just your friends and you've monopolized it. I'm talking about when you're a standalone agent who has decided to sit down at the table on their own with strangers, mostly in my life, much older men than myself, guys who've been grizzled. I didn't play blackjack for like, I want to say 5 years because when I first started playing blackjack, I would make those mistakes and get hammered by those dudes and I just didn't have the patience for it. Like once a friend and I got freaked out on by a guy and it was a scarring experience and he was right. But still we made a mistake. I like the idea that these guys have that pressure on them where the rest of the world gets to be the blackjack, like grizzled vets who complains about the decisions they make. That's a nice role change for me. So, yes, I fully endorse this. I'm actually shocked because what was the one? The NHL did one the other. They've done a couple of these.
If you're talking about the one where they had to shoot from the stands. No, they had to like, they had to like sauce pass it from the stand. It was the worst thing I've ever watched. Into like a net. It was like a Top Golf, but not.
Alice, you know who I always feel sorry for? And the last role I will ever have in sports media is, and I don't mean this in terms of by choice. I mean that I'd be the last person they would call for the stuff. Whenever they have the reporter or host that has to stand and pretend to be hyped up about an event like that, like,
Whoa,
Sid shot it from the concourse and it went in the net. Oh, so sick. Way to go, Sid. I feel for them. And then I go, how funny would it be having me do this? Where I'm standing there going, oh, yeah, good job, Sid. No, yeah, it's great.
No, you'd be like, you're trash at this.
How does this compare to the Golden Goal? Is it close? How do you feel about this?
So they've added that game, which I actually think will be really fun because it's got that skill component, the speed, the math component. So that'll be a new one. They also added the Discover NHL Fountain Face-Off. So that's going into the world-famous Bellagio Fountains, which I'd like to see Ovi swimming in. So what's going to happen there is the players travel to the little rink by boat. So they're boating around the Bellagio fountains. They will travel to the rink, and then they have to similarly shoot pucks into targets in a short amount of time, and then they go head-to-head. But they said that factors that will make it an unprecedented event is the fountain spray and the breeze from the strip. So that's their little way of saying it'll be different. I mean, visually, there's a photo of them hyping it up, and it looks pretty cool. Like, they've got this rink in the middle of the fountains, but not super, super different. The biggest one is the blackjack one, but they'll be boating through the fountains. I just thought that would be an interesting visual.
I love this one too, but this one I love just because it's going to be a disaster.
Yeah.
Someone's going to fall in the fountain with their skates on or something like that. The Bellagio fountains, for anyone who hasn't been to Vegas or thinks that that's too touristy or whatever, they're awesome. It's a great part of doing the Vegas thing. Seeing those things shoot off, like your Ocean's 11 final scene, but also like Ovi's stuck on this raft or stuck on this little ice pad. It's going to be pretty entertaining, I think. I can't imagine that's one that ever comes back, though. That's a one-and-done all-star thing.
So they should actually... of course, they need to have the All-Star Game go city to city, but for an actual attraction, having it in Vegas makes obviously the most sense. You'd be able to get the most players there. The only issue with that is that they did what Ailish said, which is everybody gets a fairness token, and they all go down to the fairness fair, and everyone gets to play equally. So that's lame. But I think this is funny because NHL players have notoriously not given a crap recently about any of these competitions. Like, none of them. Not hardest shot. Not fastest skater, right? You can't even get Connor McDavid to participate in a fastest skater. He's a slow lap. Part of hockey culture is never trying hard. Whenever it's things like that, you got to pretend as though you don't care all the time. So cool. Now they're being forced to do math as a result. You know, you guys should have just tried harder at fastest skater. You guys should have just tried harder at the accuracy contest. You should have just taken these events halfway seriously a little bit, and none of you would have to be doing math in public. And now guess what? Math in public. That's where you've gotten to. Fairness competition and math in public. I love it. What's next?
Just a side note on the still on the All-Star game. They'll still have the same regular ones, hardest shot, fastest, whatever. But when they were doing this press release yesterday, they said the NHL has announced a 4 special guests will be in attendance for the 22 NHL All-Star Games, including Manon Renome, Wyatt Russell, Jocelyn Lemieux Davidson, and Trevor Zegras. That's how they announce, like, they put him into the
sports. I don't know who 2 of those people are.
Okay, Wyatt Russell is a actor. Jocelyn Lemieux
You know who Wyatt Russell is, JD. Have you ever seen Goon 2 or Everybody Wants Some or Black Mirror or
yes,
Lodge 49?
He's the guy in the video game. You've definitely heard of this guy. Here's a bunch of stuff you've definitely not seen.
He has very famous parents. Kurt Russell is his dad.
What?
Wyatt Russell. He was a junior hockey player.
Oh, yeah. Okay, this guy.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
Anyway, so they announce, you obviously know who Manon Renome is, and Jocelyn Lemieux. Jocelyn Lemieux is a USA Olympian 3-time. She's now since retired. But they also include Trevor Zegras in their press release of special guests. I just thought that was just, like, the NHL sucks at doing this stuff. Like,
it's getting celebrities to be associated. Like, they went,
but he's in the league. Like, what?
I know. No, that's a weird one. This guy is the son of Goldie Hawn and Kurt Russell, eh? Who knew? I know this guy. Yeah, Black Mirror. He's got a good Black Mirror. All right.
Yeah. He's one of my favorite actors. I love this guy.
Yeah, except for the... Yeah, that's what I mean. If this is your biggest poll of actors at
Vegas.
Yeah, that's a tough one. That's a toughie.
But they did announce that Zed, you know, the guy that makes the music, not the letter Z.
No, Don't know that either.
ZEDD. You've probably heard him. He will be one of the musical performances, as well as Machine Gun Kelly.
Yeah, Machine Gun Kelly is a big pull for them.
Zed's probably a better. I feel like everyone will like Zed. I don't know if everyone will like Machine Gun Kelly. Like Zed is like everyone's okay. Like Zed's decent. Like he's he's like a like a techno guy.
Yeah,
I don't know. We should play some Zed in the show. Maybe Vic could play us in with Zed, but. Anyway, you'll know his song like Clarity or anyway, it's whatever.
It's he's just one of those guys who I would never know.
He's a guy.
Like, if I hear the song, I'll know the song. Just much like Wyatt Russell, where if I see the face, I know the face. This is the NHL. This is the kind of caliber guy that they get where, oh, I've seen that guy before. What's his name? Oh, I don't know. Oh, I've heard that song before. What's that band? Oh, I don't know. That's the NHL in a nutshell when it comes to being able to attract celebrities or musical guests. Never forget when the Capitals went to the Stanley Cup run and they were doing the celebrity thing and they got Wonder Woman from 100 years ago. And they were like, guys, it's Wonder Woman from 100 years ago. And everyone went, I've never seen that person in my life before who was under, 58? Like, I don't know how old you needed to be to know who that was. But not my age. not my age. And I'm pretty old. So that was pretty intense.
So that's their star-studded weekend. That's this weekend in Las Vegas. So take a look if you have nothing better to do. There are some interesting things to intrigue you at the NHL All-Star Weekend.